Hi, this is Grandy Mahar from Mythbusters, and you're listening to ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world. Movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of This Week in Geek. This Week in Geek.
Greetings, my fellow Time Lords. It is I, Mike the Birdman Dodd. And it is yet another Twig Topic Show, this time for the month of November. And this is actually going to be our last topic show of the year before we do our holiday gift guide coming up later on in the next couple of weeks here on This Week in Geek. And we're going to be talking about Doctor Who once again, looking at the series revisited now that we are at the end of Matt Smith's run. But I'm not alone. I'm actually joined in the TARDIS by my faithful, able-bodied, youthful companion,
Scotty Doo!
Woo! This is one of the things me and Scott have bonded over the last couple of years. Because Scott really got me into it when he started telling me about all the Peter Davidson stuff. And I've went back to the history of Doctor Who over the last couple of years. And obviously with the new series, Changing Doctors, again, that's a big deal. Plus we had the Day of the Doctor just a little over a week ago as of this recording. It's an exciting time to be a Doctor Who fan, and in fact, I have to thank a lot of people who helped make this show possible. I really want to thank John and Nick over at Cubicle 7. They produce the Doctor Who role-playing game, An Adventure in Time and Space, which you should hear on These Warriors Are Terrible for our Christmas special that will be available on Christmas Day on thesewarriorsareterrible.com. Also have to thank Chris over at DK Publishing for the Doctor Who Visual Guide, the Doctor Who and Character Encyclopedia, and several other books I'm sure that I'm leaving out just because they're buried under stuff. And also, finally, Tori over at BBC America, who sent us the awesome Doctor Who limited edition box set for this particular episode. And let's just say I've been annoying my wife with the sonic screwdriver ever since, because now I can control the volume from across the room. Scott, you have no idea how fun that remote control is.
You don't. Every time I walk in the store, I'm like, should I buy Christmas gifts for people or do I buy myself this?
You buy.
And I know I'm
going to
buy it for myself. I'm just waiting for the right opportunity to get it.
I actually may want to go and get the 10th Doctors as well, just because it's so much fun. Although, as a bit of a side story here, I was actually hoping to take this to the pony convention that I went to a couple of weeks ago at Canterlot in Mississauga. And I was hoping I could use it to control random TVs, but you need the other remote control to pick up the IR signals first, so you can
program it. Also,
it
doesn't work like one of those universal like TV messer-uppers?
Yeah, it doesn't work like the prank ones. However, I would imagine somebody with some engineering skill could probably do something with it. But yeah, I've got it controlling my stereo and my TV. I can turn it on and off by flicking it to the down. It's so cool, and it makes the sounds and everything. I am definitely a nerd. So let's get to how we're going to do today's show. Now, we're going to focus mostly on the 2005 series and basically where that series has gone so far. We are not going to have a Just the Facts. As we did this show a couple of years ago, it was actually me and Ryan took this on back, and I think it was the fall of 2009. So Smith had just taken over the role from David Tennant. So we'll talk about Eccleston, Tennant, and Smith, obviously, and what the 50th anniversary does to the numbering of this series. So let's I guess let's kind of get into how we got involved with the Doctor Who franchise without any further ado. Scotty, let's start with you.
I'm just trying to think. I remember I got into it really. I'd heard about it for years because my mom used to tell me about it. She used to watch it back on TVO in the 70s, back in the Tom Baker era. So she's a young kid and she used to love watching Doctor Who with her dad or with her grandpa, one of those. But it wasn't really readily available in here in the 90s and early 2000s until the reboot. And I got into it. My friend's mom started watching Doctor Who and I was like, man, this show looks stupid. Why would I watch this? I'm going to go watch Stargate SG-1. And then, true story. And then I went a few years later and I was like, okay, people are starting to talk about this show again. I want to start watching Doctor Who. But I was being a hipster and I started watching old Doctor Who first. And it was Peter Davison, the fifth Doctor, who got me into it, man. The first episode, Earthshock, he kills one of his companions. I was like, this show's hardcore. And then I started watching it and the new series simultaneously, and I got my mom into it, my sister into it, and it became a family affair, and it really became another bonding experience for all of us. So it's probably around late 2009, 2010 kind of time, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That is when I think I really got into it.
Mine has been multi-year, and I remember more of this as I get older. I remember when the 2005 series came out, I was living in Owen Sound, and a friend of mine named James Bell, guy I've been friends with since high school, and he told me about it, and I was like, eh, that sounds okay. And I remember torrenting this back in 2006, and it sat on a hard drive all throughout college, and it wasn't until about 2008, 2009... that I really got into it. As you guys may or may not know, back in 2009, I spent some time in Texas with Handsome Tom, and I caught the swine flu. So I was sent home from college. They're like, you don't come back for 2 weeks. Just don't come back, Mike. So I was like, well, I'm really bored. So I sat in my isolation studio because I wasn't allowed to leave. So I
had
to
bubble.
Yeah, well, I had to have Dave and Stefan deliver me meals.
And they'd deliver it through the crack in the floor.
Yeah, they're like, you're not coming out here, Mike. You're not coming into the living room. I'm like, all right. So I lived in my room for about 2.5 weeks, and I started watching Doctor Who because I'd forgotten about the series almost entirely, but I used to go to this little store called Entertainment Overload in Hamilton, and I got the first two seasons for like $40. I'm like, all right, whatever. So I was really bored, and I started sitting down powering through them. Holy fuck. So it was at the end of October 2009 that I really got hardcore into it, and I really loved Tennant. I mean, I remember being emotionally moved by several episodes, most notably Girl in the Fireplace and The End of Time, which would air, I think it was that year, during Christmas, when Tennant would regenerate in the Smith for the 11th hour. And I've just been a fan ever since, and I've gone back and watched Eccleston's years multiple times.
Amazing.
Because that guy deserved more than one season. But I can
see... He did.
But I can see why he left. He just wanted to get the show kickstarted. Cool, I've done my piece, I'm leaving now. And that's how I became a fan of the series. So I guess with this conversation, let's kind of start with the Doctors themselves in the 2005 reboot. Eccleston was my first Doctor, and always will be, which is really awesome because I knew Eccleston from his work on the, I'm sure to be Academy Award winning, posthumously, performance of Destro in G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra. And although I first saw him in a movie by Danny Boyle, I think it was, called 28 Days Later, which was about a zombie infection. He played this crazy army general who was holding up this base in the middle of England during this huge zombie outbreak. And I really liked his performance. And when I saw him as the ninth Doctor, I'm like, holy shit. I'm like, I know that guy. He's fucking crazy. And he just really brought this real strength to the role. And with the 2005 reboot, it was Russell T. Davies at this time, right, Scott?
Yeah, Russell T. Davies was the guy who really headed the reboot of Doctor Who.
And what he had done, he had changed the status quo of the Doctor, because the last time we saw Doctor Who was in 1996's, it was a Fox Television movie. It was supposed to be meant to be a backdoor pilot for a rebooted series with Paul McGann as the Eighth Doctor. So we knew this guy was the Ninth. Well, technically the Tenth now.
Yep.
And what it was, they talked about the last great Time War and how the Daleks and the Time Lords had wiped themselves out from existence. He was the last one of his kind, because back in the earlier series, the Time Lords would regularly interact with
yep.
the Doctor. They were, I wouldn't call them friends, but there was the Time Lady, there was President Rassilon. There were all these people who played a very important role in Time Lord society. Mm-hmm. And it was now, with Russell T. Davies, he could do whatever he wanted. And they even addressed the Daleks in the first season of the new series with an episode called Dalek, where him, Billy Piper, went into this underground vault held by this crazy collector, Harry Van Stanton, or I don't know, some guy, and he had held this thing he called a Metaltron underground for X amount of years, just torturing the shit out of it. And the Doctor had told the Dalek, we're the last two of our kind in the universe, so why don't you just kill yourself? And that is something the Doctor in its previous incarnations would never have said.
Mm-mm.
Because he was so... There is something about Eccleston's Doctor that no other Doctor has gotten right since. And it's the fact that gave the Doctor an edge, a bite, that he was this scarred war survivor. And that's something that really attracted me to this particular incarnation, even through Tennant and Smith. I really like the fact that he will hurt you if he has to. It's not the first choice of action. But if push comes to shove, and if it means saving one versus saving a billion, I guarantee you he's going to save the billion at the cost of one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I really
he really did have that edge. And I think the next I think that, especially when you look at the 50th anniversary, how they've done that, it almost seems like it was planned.
Yeah. When
you think of how the regeneration would have gone.
Yeah, exactly. And it's something that the show, as much as the show is a wonderful machine of storytelling, the big thing with Doctor Who is if it doesn't work, you can always pull the timey-wimey bullshit card.
Oh, yeah.
Which is amazing. The fact that Doctor Who is full of so many plot holes, and you can just explain it away by saying timey-wimey. it's so bad, yet we just accept it because it does make the character somewhat more interesting, because you look at how time travel works, and even in the role-playing books by Cubicle 7, there's actually chapters dedicated to how time travel works. I'm thinking, well, that explained a lot of nothing. And they just say that's just how time works. And if history has to correct itself, it will. If something breaks like a paradox, the universe can fix small ones. Big ones, it's got a problem with. And with Eccleston's role as the Doctor, he could have changed so many parts throughout history. And in fact, he never even knows that he saved Gallifrey because of what had happened in the events of Day of the Doctor, which I guess, as you saw by the episode post, spoilers, by the way. if you don't know this by now, I'm sorry. The Day of the Doctor aired a week ago. You've had since 2005 to catch up. I feel no sympathy for you.
But if you look at it, it's almost technically Christopher Eccleston's Doctor we saw on the show would have been pre-Day of the Doctor. So what happened with the War Doctor would have scarred him still. So Gallifrey would have been destroyed during that series. It's not till now that everything technically... It's weird, because it technically retcons everything the last few years of anything with Gallifrey. And it's crazy if you start to think about it.
Yeah, because you look at what happened with Rassilon and the Tenth Doctor in The End of Time, or Journey's End, I think it was called, where they basically break the time lock using a warp star, or whatever the hell it was called, with the Master and the sound of the drums.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's some interesting paradoxes there. And with a show like Doctor Who, people just seem to let it go. And
because it somehow makes sense.
Yeah, like, there is no saying, hey, it's just, it's time travel, what do you want?
No, exactly.
And they even try and explain it away a little bit at the end of The Day of the Doctor, where Smith says, well, the time streams are out of alignment, so we're not going to remember any of this anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, but Journey's End and Tenant and the end of the Time War...
Don't worry, that technically never happened.
Yeah, that technically never happened, so technically the Master is still around.
That's what I'm excited for, because I want the Master back with Peter Capaldi.
I think that would be awesome.
You do not know how excited I am. The Master is one of my favorite villains.
I want them to bring back the Time Lady. In fact, I'd love to even see another appearance by Timothy Dalton as Rassilon, because I thought he played a wonderful villain.
I think they're going to try to get him back, especially if... Again, when you're talking about the end of time the 50th anniversary with the whole Gallifrey falls no more, and he's like, oh shit, so he's going to go look for Gallifrey, and I guarantee that they're going to see Rassilon again, and I hope that it is Timothy Dalton. I don't think he's doing anything, so I don't think it should be an issue.
Yeah, and he made such an impact in only... He was only in, like, those two episodes at the end of, like, Tennant's run. And it just... It's nice to see the fact that they can represent such a part of Time Lord society. And I think Rassilon and Timothy Dalton, he gives an elegance to that role. Because you see a guy who's literally pushed to the end of his rope. Like, literally, we're gonna die here, guys. And then the whole, I want to ascend Gallifrey to beings of consciousness and energy and destroy time. It gets a little fruity there.
but it's something the Time Lords would have wanted, it seems.
Yeah.
Some of the Radicals.
And it's crazy that the fact that Eccleston's character, I wonder what he would have done in that situation. I think he would have...
He would have destroyed. He would have been all for destroying, I think.
Yeah, and that's something I like about the new series as opposed to the old stuff, at least from what I've seen, because I've only really seen 3rd, 4th, 5th, and bits of 7.
Have you watched all of their runs?
No, I've seen most of 3's.
Oh, wow, okay, that's more than I have. I'm really trying to get into some 4th. I've watched one or two 7's, and I'm really trying to get into the old stuff, a lot of the older.
I love John... Pertree's third
the James Doctor. Bond of Doctor Who.
Oh my god, there's something so fun about that. The first thing I watched with him, it was on American Netflix, and it was, think the serial was called The Island of Monsters, and it's about how the Doctor and I think it's Joe at this point, they travel to this universe or this planet where they are really, really friggin' tiny, and they're captured by some carnival people and put on this simulation. It's really weird, but it's so much fun. And that's something I think the new series knew enough to be fun and yet serious, because mm-hmm. you get episodes like in the first in Eccleston's run, anything involving Satellite 5 was really fun, and especially when they start going to, I think the episodes were Bad Wolf and Parting of Ways, the end of his run before the regeneration,
mm-hmm.
Where they had the weakest lay, and yeah, Big Brother and what not to wear, and there was something a lot of fun with that. Plus, also having characters like Captain Jack and Billy Piper. There's mm-hmm. something about those particular characters introduced in this run that gave the series its own identity. As much as I love Sarah Jane, Joe, Ace, and Aldrich, there was something about these people that brought it into a modern perspective. I could relate to Billy Piper. I could relate to Captain Jack to a certain extent. And I don't know, it's made the series more real to me, is what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But when Eccleston regenerated after destroying the Dalek fleet with Billy Piper in her Bad Wolf persona, which we wouldn't see again technically until Day of the Doctor, we got David Tennant's run. This is the run where everybody fell in love with this show at first. And there's obviously the still great debate on who's better, Tennant or Smith. Camps are split. I'm Team Eccleston, though. And we got to see a more humane side to the Doctor, but also, once again, that push comes to shove, where he basically drowns the Rachnos Queen. He forces the Sycorax off of Earth. Hi, Wily. He's perched on my shoulder. And there's just something about him and Billy Piper that gives this tragic romance to it, although it does get resolved later on in season 3 in a very happy-ish kind of way. What are your thoughts on David Tennant's run?
I love David Tennant's run. Like, that is when I think the show really started to hit its stride with its popularity, especially when you get to seasons 4, when you start getting that real serious, that the whole series really interconnected with the whole invasion and then the end of David Tennant with the invasion of the Daleks of Earth and stuff. Like, it started to get really dark and grim. And that was such a change of pace, I felt, and I really enjoyed that. But David Tennant in general, I thought he really encompassed all of the Doctors, I guess, in a sense. Like, he was young and energetic, yet he was wise in certain regards. He was fun. He was humorous. He had some really funny bits to him. He could be serious. He really was a well-rounded Doctor.
Yeah, and there was something about his interactions with each of his companions, because Tennant had done something that had never really been done in the course of one Doctor's run, or at least so quickly. He went through a lot of companions fast. He went through Billy Piper. He went through Martha Jones. Was that Martha Jones? Yeah. He went through Donna Noble. And he had companions in his other side adventures, like Spaceship Titanic, who... Ow! Thanks, Wily, asshole. Cat just jumped on my shoulder and it really hurt. And he would have all these adventures, and even... He would have one that I don't quite know how to quite put in the words. During Waters of Mars, where the woman has to kill herself to prevent the timeline from changing, though Smith has saved her, and it's her death that spurs further generations of space travel. There's something about Tennant knowing he tried to save her, and he broke the rules of time travel that I absolutely loved. And there's something about Tennant's portrayal. There was something so very, very, very human about it. Mm-hmm. Where you get just these glimpses of a guy who knows he's alone. He wants something more than a companion, but knowing it's kind of a bad idea.
Yeah, exactly. And it's almost like that really reminded me of like Highlander, like the scene when
Heather dies or whatever.
He's like has his wife and like she's dying and he never ages and just here who wants to live forever, and that always breaks my heart.
Yeah, like, there's one episode I did not expect it to affect me the way it did, and it's just, it's a throwaway episode called Girl in the Fireplace. He meets Madame de Pompadour in the, I guess it's like the 1600s or something, and every time he visits her, years pass her, yet it may be minutes or seconds for him,
mm-hmm.
And there's this love, and you know he's going back for her to bring her along on the TARDIS one last time, and she's gone. And I think he talks to someone and says she loved him very much. And there was just something about that. Like, I actually cried. And there's actually more than a few times that during Tennant's run, I actually got choked up that I didn't quite expect. And there was just something. He had this very natural charisma about him, this very relatable excitability that. He says this to the Master, I think, at one point, where he says, you want to rule the universe, I just want to see it. And you really get this really devil-may-care, happy-go-lucky kind of guy, yet knowing he's still got a responsibility. He had so many facets to that role, and it's not often you see a role like that portrayed on television so vividly, especially in only 13 episodes, because British television only does 13 as opposed to the Americans' 23 or 22 episode orders for a season.
But it almost really evens out because the episodes are the 40-minute episodes, so they're basically double the length of our 26, so it really evens out if you think about it time wise.
Yeah, and there's something very different about the way between British and American storytelling is you get so much more across. Like, for example, you would accomplish more in a season of Doctor Who than you could accomplish in, let's say, a season or a show like, say, I don't know, let's say Heroes, for example. You may not. There are very rarely throwaway episodes.
Well, the way the British do their television, in the sense of they don't call them seasons, they call them series, which really goes in the fact that each season you could technically watch as a standalone television series. It has an opening and a closing in that series. You could give someone a series of Doctor Who, I think, like series like 4 or 5 or something like that, and give it to them. It has a beginning and an end, and that story is complete. Whereas you have like American television, where your story is going on for years. You can't just watch like season 3 of Breaking Bad and start watching. You have to watch from the very beginning.
Yeah, and it's something that I like about British television, and it's something I think Russell T. Davies had really did with his shows. There was a lot more recurring themes in every episode. Like, you get the Bad Wolf, or Vote Saxon, or He Will Knock 4 times with the Hood. And you even get references to Day of the Doctor as far back as season, or as series 1 with the New Doctor, where they talk about Bad Wolf and the Time War. And it's just, it's little things that eventually get picked up later, and definitely with the Stephen Moffat era with Matt Smith in the 5th series. It really, there's a lot of, I would dare say, unresolved and kind of some bullshit ones, but we'll talk about those in just a minute. I guess with Tennant, I like how he got a lot of the really fun ones. Like, he got, one of the ones I really love, and nobody ever talks about this one, is one where he plays opposite David Morrissey in...
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah. He's so... You know what? I think at a time, people had talked about David Morrissey coming back.
Well, that was the whole... That's where they're throwing people off with that. Because this is before... This is during his year specials. Because he kind of got screwed out of a series. So after series... No, it wasn't series. It was one of the series. They just gave him a year specials. So when they gave him this special here, everyone thought that his regeneration was going to be David Morrissey, and that's how they're trying to throw off people.
And it worked so well, and the fact that they referenced all the other series, it was such a fangasm for so many people being exposed to that. It was like, oh my god, there's number 3, there's number 6, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they go back and talk about his past lives. It was really exciting for people. And one of the unexpected things of Tennant is... we're going to talk about this more in just a minute. It was the relationship he had with his companions, and specifically one, Wilfred Mott. I think that was his name, wasn't it? No. Either way, Donna's grandfather. I don't know where I got that from. And he has such this father-son thing with him, and he says on the ship when they're hovering above Earth with the cactus people, if I had a son, I'd want him to be you. And he hands the doctor a pistol and says, you know what has to be done. And he's crying while he's doing it. He's like, I don't want to change who you are, but you're going to have to step up. And it's really sad. And the moment when Wilfred knocks on the glass the 4 times to let him out of the radiation chamber and Tennant has to go in, it's really heartbreaking because he knows his life is over. And he makes a speech to Wilfred very early on in the episode, and he's like, regeneration is like dying. It's like, I'm gone, and some new man saunters off in my clothes. And when he goes back and visits everybody, he visits Martha and Mickey, Rose, like a couple days before she meets him, and he's regenerating, and he starts to see the energy flow out of his body, and he's like, I don't want to go. I'm not going to lie, bald like a bitch for
everyone
easily 20 minutes.
Everyone bald like a bitch. I remember my mom watched it for the first time, and she's fucking weeping, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is really heartbreaking. You see the emotion on his face, and it became more than just, because all the other doctors were like, okay, I'm leaving, I'm regenerating right now, so I might not remember what's happening. he was the only one who was so emotional about it, because he's like, I don't want to go become a new man now. Came to the point where, yeah, what you're saying, a new man comes and takes my clothes and walks off. It's not me anymore. Yeah. And that's always a weird, weird thing to think about sometimes, how he basically does die, and a whole new man comes to take his place with some of his memories, but his personality and everything is different.
It's weird, because I can't think, honestly, of any sci-fi show that had that kind of emotional resonance with its audience. I mean, I love The X-Files, but I didn't... The only point I cried during that series is when the lone gunman died. And that's because I had the connection with them over the course of the series and their own TV series. But when people would pass away on that show, I didn't care. With Doctor Who, it had less than the X-Files run, that's for goddamn sure. And I cared. I really can't think of any television show where I've actually cared that much. Even 24, when I thought people like Tony Almeida had died, or people like Michelle Dessler, I cared, but not as much as when the Doctor left.
And I had a conversation with my friend, and she was talking, she's a big fan, and she was talking about regenerations and such, and how she thought they were such a cool thing and stuff. And I was really going on an emotional level here. You're in college, you always go on the emotional deep level, on how if you think about regenerations, like the Time Lords have the ability to travel through time, yet they have that curse of regenerations, I feel, in the sense that they do lose kind of like who they were before. And I just felt that would be, that's so shitty. Like, I would just want to have my one life. Sure, if I was offered regenerations and I have thousands of years to live or whatever, I don't think I'd want that. Because the sense, like, I'm traveling to all these different places, and the people wouldn't remember me if I went back to see them after regeneration. Sometimes they do when you watch Doctor Who, because they know, obviously, it's a TV show. But it's just something about that. Somebody I've known for years, I regenerate, and them not remembering my face. I think it almost comes down to, if you think about having a grandparent or something who has Alzheimer's and forgets who you are.
Yeah, because I think one example we can relate to this is Sarah Jane.
Yeah.
Because she, the last time she saw him, he was Tom Baker. Or maybe, I think Tom Baker was the last time she saw the Doctor, then seeing him as Tennant, and then seeing him as Smith in the Sarah Jane adventures later on. That's a face she didn't know. That's a whole new spin on it. Now to take a cup of emotional piss out of this conversation right now, my wife has just walked in with a advent calendar from Monsters University. I'm unbelievably excited for this. So I just thought I'd soften things up for just a moment here.
I have Monsters University wrapping paper right beside me.
Eat the first one.
The first one is Mike's tooth. And I will as soon as I have off air. But thank you, Blair. So thank you, Monsters University, for an awesome advent calendar. Thank you, baby. So one of the things that changed things up, and let's get the Smiths run because his is the most current. The show changed hands from Russell T. Davies to Stephen Moffat, who had written some really good episodes during Tennant's run. And when he was handed the show, it really changed direction. The fact that Billy Piper was out of the picture now. Captain Jack was out of the picture now. Which I always felt that hurt the series, not bringing back Captain Jack.
Me, I know. It always bugged me. The 50th anniversary, I was hoping we'd get Captain Jack. I loved his character so much. And with the Torchwood Institute, and you have that spinoff there. I was like, man, you gotta bring him back. Captain Jack was so loved by everyone.
Well, yeah, because John Barrowman is just this huge barrel of, hey guys, I'm awesome. And he's very excitable to everything that he does. So with Smith's run, we had a new TARDIS, a new Doctor, and a new set of companions with Amy Pond, played by Karen Gillian. This amazingly hot redhead, I'm sorry. Although I will say Smith has gotten the best looking companions so far. My wife is whispering something in my ear. Oh, yeah. My wife wants me to mention the Doctor Who club that one of the schools does. So, Scott, don't let me forget to mention that as we talk about the franchise going forward.
And which, sorry, you just broke up for a second, the Doctor Who
fan club that runs at one of the schools that she actually teaches at. So we'll talk about that when we talk about the franchise going forward.
Okay.
Talking about Smith's run, he was the youngest that the actor has ever been. I think he was 28 when he started.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought this youthful excitability. I think they called him the madman with a blue box or the schoolboy with a blue box. And he brought a lot of just... He brought a lot of comedy to the role. But when he needed to bring that seriousness to it, he could also do it as well. He had a number of really good episodes with him. My favorites probably being the Pandorica episodes, where they have to reboot the entire universe. And honestly, I'll say this. If the series had ended on Smith saving the universe like that, and Amy bringing him back through the power of basically wishing and remembering, I would have been okay with that, because it was such a good moment. If it was to end, it would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
However, though, Smith's run, I honestly felt it had more bad episodes than good, but the good ones were overshadowed by the really good ones.
I fell out of Doctor Who because of it.
There, most of the sixth season, I felt was trash. It was garbage because they tried to cram too much into it. Now, one of the interesting things, and I never expected this to happen, is during Tennant's run, there was an episode called Silence in the Library, and they introduced a character called River Song, who is played by Alex Kingston, formerly of ER fame. She played this archaeologist scientist, and she's supposedly knows who the Doctor is. In the fifth series, she's revealed to be the Doctor's wife somehow. And basically, in my opinion, she's a Mary Sue. And that is... In Star Trek fan fiction, whenever someone is introduced as the daughter of Captain Kirk, they are invincible. They can do no wrong. That's, my friends, is River Song.
Especially, you don't like River Song?
I friggin' hate River Song.
Really? I adore her, and I love every episode she comes in to play.
I feel like she's OP'd as a character. There's just... She can fly the TARDIS.
She's a Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah, basically, if there's ever a problem that, you know, Doctor can't solve...
River Song appears.
Exactly, like, ooh! And I really didn't like that, because I never felt there was that during Tennant's run. There was never, oh, shit, oh, just call River Song. She's like the Better Call
Better
Saul
Call
Saul.
Better reach Screech.
Exactly. It's so bad. And the fact that every episode, she's always meant to be so important. And I never, see, the thing is, I saw the romance between Tennant and Billy Piper. I even saw little hints of it with Martha Jones, who's the companion I dislike the most.
Oh, I hated her.
But we'll talk about companions after this. Oh, believe me, we will talk. and I never bought the whole sweetie and spoilers thing. I never bought it for a second. But it's not to say the character didn't serve the purpose during the run. Obviously being very important to the sixth season and the order called the Silence and all that. But it felt like Smith's run, like I said, there were so many throwaway episodes or episodes that only had 5 minutes you needed to know about. I did like the fifth series where they had the cracks in time.
Fifth series was awesome.
Yeah, it's because my favorite was the Pandorica, where all the enemies, the Sigrax, the Jadoon, the Silurians, everybody.
Everybody went to stop the Doctor.
Because he was going to destroy reality.
Yeah, and that's when they were almost like, that's when they almost kind of gave you that dilemma, is the Doctor a good guy, or is like, what he doing kind of like, have some consequence to it?
Yeah, because the Daleks refer to him on Skaro as the oncoming storm, and because wherever the Doctor goes, and they point this out in Day of the Doctor, death seems to follow him, and it's not like he's actively going out and killing people. And even Davros says this in the End of Time, I think it is. He says to the Doctor, "You turn ordinary people into soldiers. What does that make you? We are more alike than you realize." And Tennant's like, "No, we are nothing alike." He's like, "Oh, yes, we are. Look at your Captain Jack and all that shit." And I'm thinking, holy shit. And with Smith's run, Amy and Rory were never soldiers, but if something needed done, he could always count on River Song. He could always count on someone pulling the trigger when he didn't have to. Although I would say Smith's run, he had more creative solutions to his problems.
He was MacGyvering it.
Yeah, and I liked that about him, because even in the bad episodes, he was still watchable. But when the series, I felt, kind of backed itself into a corner, because in the seventh season, they return to this idea of the sixth season where they talk about silence will fall on the 11th or something like that, on the fields of Trenzalore, which is the planet where Smith discovers his tomb. The TARDIS is there. His body supposedly there, and it's splintered and everything. The great intelligence has brought him there or something. I can't remember. That's another thing, too. It's really hard to keep a lot of the Stephen Moffat stuff together.
I know. I don't, because that's, I'm thinking right now, and I'm having a big issue. I was trying to remember the plots of certain things, and it just becomes convoluted, I feel, at certain points.
Yeah, it's really hard to keep, like, what the hell's going on sort of thing. And that's the whole thing with River Song. She's revealed to be Rory and Amy's kid. She's part Time Lord, yet gave up all her regenerations to save the Doctor when she went to go kill Hitler.
Oh, I hate that fucking episode.
Yeah, because Melody Ponce, actually, doesn't she start out black and then turns white?
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, okay, so Time Lords can randomly change race, which is okay. I think that's cool. But it's just, it gets so convoluted, and I think, as much as I love Doctor Who, I like Stephen Moffat, I really do, I like Russell T. Davies, Moffat just seems to be complicated for the sake of being complicated.
He's being complicated because people are like, oh, Sherlock. That's why he's doing it, in my humble opinion. I think Russell T. Davies was superior in his writing of Doctor Who. Because Russell T. Davies, in my opinion, actually had a plan.
I would say Moffat has more fun or has more gimmicky ideas.
He does. And if they both work together kind of thing, like when Moffat would write episodes for the when Russell T. Davies was head of the show, those were good episodes. Like, you'd see Stephen Moffat. I'm bad because I don't remember episode names that these specific people wrote. Mm-hmm. But I just feel, yeah, when you give him all the creative freedom of it, you lose something.
Yeah, it's like you're giving the kid too many crayons.
Exactly.
Color the page with. So
I love Davies' stuff. Like, his stuff all seemed to work into place. And the fact that he started because of him, how many spin-off series were there?
There was Torchwood. There was the Sarah Jane
And they adventure. All interconnected properly.
And yet, when Moffat took the show, Torchwood got, what was it? Miracle Day, which is unfortunate because nobody remembers that. No one talks about it. Sarah Jane Adventures had come to an end at this point.
Well, because she unfortunately had passed away.
Well, because she just filmed like her final episode or one of the final episodes before the series ended. And it just became a big goddamn mess, for lack of a word. And I can see why so many people give Moffat shit for the show, but I think he's good for it because it keeps bringing new people in every time. And I'm very interested to see where the new Doctor with Peter Capaldi is going to go, because he's an older guy now. And they've explained that in the canon as a Doctor's willing to let himself grow up in this new regeneration. But we'll talk about that a little bit later in the show as we lead up to the Christmas special of this year, which will be ultimately a really big game changer in terms of the series. Let's talk about companions, Scotty. Who do we love? Who do we hate? Let's talk about who we hate first. I just want to get this out of the way so I can get the unpleasantness out of the way. I hate Martha Jones.
Yeah, I don't like her either.
There was just this needy whininess to her. The Doctor, love me!
Just in general, she just pissed me off in every respect. Like, I... Coming off of Billy Piper as a companion, and you go to Martha, I was like, holy fuck, this chick sucks, man. Let's just get Billy Piper back on here.
Well, there was no charisma with her, and I think that's part of the problem. And she, the problem with Martha Jones is the... It was this one-upmanship, or I have to be the doctor's girlfriend, or he has to be in love with me. It never felt natural. To me, they never felt like friends. They felt like they met off of Plenty of Fish, and they were just going on a series of dates.
I know.
Now, not
just like a crazy psycho axe murderer. It's like, he loves her. He has to love me. I want him to get me pregnant.
Yeah,
it's so we be together forever.
It just, it got ridiculous. Although Martha Jones's run did have the best episode to draw people in. That episode is Blink during her run. And I really enjoy the Daleks in Manhattan.
That is one plot I would have loved to see go farther with the human Dalek. Like, we have to evolve. I'm now superior to you. No, nothing is superior to us, but I have evolved. And then they kill him.
Yeah, they're the whole Dalek sec and everything. Yeah, like, there was so much possibilities open there. And that's the thing. With Martha Jones's run, the three episodes I remember are the Daleks in Manhattan stuff and Blink. And the episode with William Shakespeare. Those are the only episodes I remember.
I don't remember any of them besides those two. When you said William Shakespeare, I was like, what episode was that?
The Witches and the Power of Words.
I do not remember that episode at all.
I liked it. It was good. But yeah, I don't remember anything. I mean, I remember they introduced the Jadoon in the episode where they introduced Martha Jones, the space rhinos. But yeah. Ultimately, it was a lot of who gives a shit?
Yeah, pretty much exactly. Who gives a flying fuck?
Now, the companion I did not expect to love as much as I did was Donna Noble.
Oh, I adored her. She's my sister's favorite companion.
She started off as really annoying, and then I'm like, man, you're actually kind of awesome.
She is hilarious, though. Like, her and David Tennant have done some comedy stuff together. Like, she had a big sketch show in the UK, which I think why they brought her on. I loved her because she added that sassy cheekiness to the Doctor Who. Doctor's like, okay, do this. He's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, you don't tell me what to do kind of thing sometimes. She had some sass to her.
And it was always, to me, those adventures felt like two best friends.
That's exactly what it felt like. It's like they were buds. Like, hey guys, we're going to go on a road trip. This is like two friends who go on a road trip and do crazy shit.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I loved her, like, listen here, spaceman. And just, it was all these all these things she would say to Tennant, and he'd be like, what? Or there's just...
Spaceman!
There's so much fun with Donna Noble, and yet so much tragedy. After she becomes the Dr. Donna, he has to purge his memory from her, or she'll burn up. Because the mind can't handle it. And there's just so much with it,
when you
too.
Come to Donna...
And you... yeah, there's just... I don't know. I think Tennant was at some of his best when he was with Donna. He was comfortable in the role. There was no overarching relationship there. It was just two best buds they're like Bill and Ted.
Exactly. And what I liked with Donna was her father, like how we've mentioned before. The relationship all three of them had together, especially Tennant and Donna's father.
Yeah, there was it felt like a family. It really did. And no other companions except for Amy and Rory have come close to that.
The thing is, they tried to incorporate that whole family thing when they started introducing Rory's dad. And I felt they were trying to get that demographic kind of thing they had with Tennant and Donna's father, but I just never felt it with Mr. Weasley.
Yeah, he was just, hi, I'm Mr. Weasley. Yeah, it just...
That's why it threw me off, too. It's like, this guy's already well-known as this character. I can't see him as anything else.
Yeah, it ultimately falls kind of bleh. I mean, on the side there, which is really unfortunate. So to talk about other companions, Billy Piper, fantastic. And a lot of people hate on Rose.
My
and
sister
I don't get why.
Too. I think it's a female thing.
Is it because she's young and pretty? Is it because she's kind of an idiot at the start? Or,
but I think that's the charm. Is like she is kind of that like ditzy. She's just like she's kind of dumb, but she starts to learn, and you see her grow up and change throughout the series when she's with David.
Absolutely. I mean, there are times where she genuinely wants to reach out and help, and I think one of her better episodes is Dalek, where she reaches out to the Dalek, she touches him, and even though the Dalek's got the exterminator gun at her face, she's like, I want to help you. Why? Because you're in pain. And she humanized the Doctor with Eccleston and Tennant. She has, as you said, she makes people grow up, but I think she has this ability to make people realize they're better than what they are.
I think with her, the episode when they had her that kind of broke my heart was when when the Doctor's hand, which you keep forgetting about existed for a while, like regenerates into a second Tennant, but he's incapable of regeneration kind of thing, and he'll die. And when him, that Doctor, and Billy Piper are on one dimension, and then the David Tennant Doctor, the real Doctor, has to leave and never see her again.
Yeah, and they're speaking through this rift that a supernova has created, and she asks him to say, I love you, and there that moment where they first leave each other after the Cybermen in the Battle of Canary Wharf. Yeah, I think that's another moment that had me going, too. He just says Rose Tyler, and you know he's going to say, I love you, and the transmission cuts off. That's one of the few times you scream at the television going, no!
I almost got choked up thinking about that part, man.
Yeah, it's really sad. And that's the thing. The companions, sometimes romance works.
And I think it would have worked with them, like those companions. I felt it with Tennant and Rose.
They tried to pull the same thing with Amy and the 11th Doctor, but the thing is that it evolved from a schoolgirl crush into a friendship.
Yeah. I felt that was almost getting kind of weird in a sense, like when I thought about it, because I'm like, well, he first met her when she was like 5, and then he disappeared and came back. And like, then there's the whole like, are you cheating on me with this alien? And I was like, man, this is getting kind of weird. And I guess that's why they're like, oh, it's a friendship. You guys are getting married. I'm helping you get married. But there's also a hostility the Doctor had towards Rory.
Yeah, because he felt like he was kind of a moron, or he wasn't willing to take charge.
I almost felt like he's like, you're not good enough for Amelia Pond. Yeah. I am. And I was like, that kind of got a little weird. Like, I guess I've never really seen jealousy in a sense in the Doctor like that.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until after they got married that it did seem like, okay, you know what it seemed like, and this is going to seem really weird. It seems like How I Met Your Mother in Space.
And the Doctor is Barney Stinson.
Exactly. That's exactly how it plays out.
The Doctor always suits up, man.
And it kind of worked out in the end because Amy had grown beyond the crush on the Doctor, but they still cared for each other very much like friends or even a brother and sister sort of thing. He still wanted the best for him. And though the Doctor begrudgingly respects Rory, though he didn't like him
very
much.
I think it's
after
the Pandorica debacle that he really respects him.
Because he stood there for 2,000 years.
I know.
Which I never... Maybe somebody in the audience can answer this for me. Feedback at thisweekingeek.net.
I think we're going to have the same question here, and I was hoping you were going to tackle it. Good.
Is Rory still an Auton, or is he real now, or... I don't know. I really don't, because obviously to survive 2,000 years, you're going to be made of living plastic. But when the universe reboots...
No, I think when it rebooted, though, he was a human again.
Okay, see, that's what I don't know.
Well, because they had a kid, too, so I don't think living plastic can...
But they could have had the kid on board the TARDIS when they were fooling around before the universe rebooted.
Damn time travel.
Yeah, exactly. It, fucking timey-wimey, right?
But when they when Rory and Amy Pond left, the way that was a pretty intense way to have them leave, I felt like. Usually it's all like a friendly goodbye kind of thing, like I'll see you around. But here he's like, I can never, ever see them again.
That's another episode. That's the only episode of the Matt Smith era where I cried.
That, because there's also episode, like when you have the giant weeping angel behind them and they're going to kill themselves. They hold each other. They're going to have they're going to kill themselves, jump off this building to try to create that paradox so Rory doesn't die.
Yeah, it's...
The fact that that was an option in that show, I was like, this is evolving in that regard, where they're tackling that, and they're going to kill themselves. And obviously, nothing happens, but then the angel takes him, he sees his gravestone, and then Amy Pond is fucking in tears, and... Oh, man.
And although one thing I will say about Moffat's era is he did really establish more rules to time travel, but also more ways to break them. Mm-hmm. Where if you see your own tombstone, it has to happen now. Sort of thing, like it, or where he introduces the idea where if you read ahead and there's spoilers, you're now predestined to have that happen. Or something like that, the universe will find a way, so to speak. I guess, what other companions are we missing here?
Oh, we have Oswin.
Oh, Clara. Did not like her at first, really like her now.
Oh, I like her now, too. One thing I was trying to see if my sister noticed, but there's been, right when Oswin starts, there's, like, quite a few references to Amy Pond in, like, books that are being read everywhere. It says Amelia Williams on it. Fun little fact.
I didn't like even notice that.
Yep.
That's really cool.
I started picking up on these things because that's one of my favorite things to do is like really look into things sometimes when I'm watching a show and see if I can pick up references to stuff that happened before.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really cool one. Like a book in the first episode, well, not Asylum of the Daleks, but the first episode after they leave when she's the nanny, when the doctor meets her for the second time or whatever it is. And like the girl's reading a book and she's like, oh, this is one of my favorites. And the author is Amelia Williams.
That's kind of awesome.
I think it's called The Girl Who Waited or something like that. It's something to reference her waiting for the doctor.
That's really interesting. I like that. I'm going to have to go back and like watch that now.
Yeah.
Which I really hope she stays around for. She's got this awesome charisma about her. Other than the fact that she's remarkably beautiful.
Oh, you're
like,
telling me.
Like, just, it's something about the way she talks that I really find attractive. And it's not just the English accent. There's just, I don't know. It's
the way she carries herself in general.
Yeah, she's got this natural charisma. She's very whimsical, but knows exactly when to turn it down to say, okay, we've got a problem. We have to solve this. And now, one thing before I move on to the 50th anniversary, he wasn't really a companion, but is a surprisingly reoccurring character, is Craig. He appears with his son, Stormageddon. I love this. Just the fact that he's such a fun character too, Craig, and the fact that they brought him back in Series 7 with the Cybermen, and the fact that he didn't want to be converted for the love of his son saved him and in consequence the world. That was really clever of him to come back, and it's nice to see one-off characters like that come back. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What's the other guy who has the apartment or whatever?
Craig, yeah, that's him.
Yeah, okay, I thought so.
I'd love to see them bring back Vincent Van Gogh. I thought he was a great one-off character. Well, he technically does, where he paints the exploding TARDIS. I just thought he was a great one-off. And they've brought back the guy who played Winston Churchill a couple of times in Victory of the Daleks and a few other episodes. There's the FBI agent from The Impossible Astronaut.
One I liked was when they brought back, I forget her actual name, but the Lethbridge Stewart, the daughter of... I'm terrible with names.
Yeah, she's the daughter of the Brigadier. I think it's Jennifer.
Yeah. I thought that was kind of a cool, like, I like when they throw references to Classic Who in there. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I hope they make UNIT more of a thing in Capaldi's era. I really do. Because
I wish Torchwood would be available again so Captain Jack could come back.
Has there ever been a reason stated why they don't?
No. At least far as I know.
If anybody out there knows, seriously, feedback at thisweekingeek.net, I'd love to know, because the fact that having Captain Jack and Capaldi together could be really awesome.
Capaldi.
So, let's talk...
I wish it was more hardcore of a show so we can get the true Capaldi.
Yeah, go look up Peter... Look up the Doctor swearing on YouTube. You'll find a clip of Peter Capaldi from another show that he's done. Oh, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be an amazing year to be a Who fan. So let's talk about the 50th anniversary.
Okay.
So this obviously is the day of the Doctor, the last day of the time, with the time where he uses the moment to wipe out Time Lords and Daleks alike. And it introduces a previously unknown incarnation of the Doctor known as the War Doctor, portrayed by John Hurt.
And now the Ninth Doctor.
Yeah, so push everything you know about Doctor Who and advance it by one.
So technically Capaldi is the final regeneration of the Doctor.
Yep. And that, people are like, oh my god, does that mean the show's ending? No.
No.
Do you know why? Because the BBC likes money.
And because they've also, because Gallifrey is a thing again. And sorry, I'm just going to go back to the last special they had, which is the 25th, if I'm correct. The Five Doctors, in which the Master is on his final regeneration. But because the Council asks him to go save the Doctor, the Five Doctors, he gets all his regenerations back. I think that's the reason why they brought Gallifrey back.
Yeah,
it's because there's some way they can re-give Time Lords their regenerations.
That's what I think's going to happen, too. And I think it's the most predictable of all.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, but I'm kind of glad it works out like this. The fact that they're going to want a reasonable reason to give the Doctor all his regenerations back, because they know the show's too popular for it to just end. And, you know, it's more popular than it's ever been. The fact that new Whovians are coming in all the time.
By the second.
Yeah, and there's literally new conventions popping up. I mean, we just had Colin Baker in Toronto a couple of weeks ago.
Colin Baker is here too?
Yeah, he filmed...
Peter Davison was here.
Yeah, they filmed...
I didn't get to go see, and I'm mad.
I'm very sad. I would have liked to have met those two, just to say, hey, I've met so-and-so. Although, if I had to meet a classic Doctor who's still alive, Sylvester McCoy would be my pick.
He's a nutter.
He looks like so much fun. And one of the things that this now introduces, the fact that Gallifrey is now around, again, in a pocket universe, but it still exists.
Are you sure it's a pocket universe? I thought it was in the universe in general.
No, they said a pocket universe, because I made sure to listen to the wording when I was watching it again last night. And I'm thinking, huh, but it's lost in time or something. So now the Doctor's going to be looking for Gallifrey, and at the end of the episode, they have all 13 Doctors use their TARDISes to create some kind of a space bubble thing to warp Gallifrey out of there, and the dogs kill each other. Of course, one or two survive, but you're not going to kill the Daleks, let's be honest. You are not going to kill the dogs, you're not going to kill the Cybermen. Everybody else is up for grabs.
You know, I think I might have missed that little part because I had a bathroom break, so I wasn't feeling well during the 50th, so I might have missed that little part.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what this is going to do to the status quo of Who, because like you just said, he's now technically on his last regeneration. But now with the Time Lords back, that also creates a paradox.
That's going to be the whole plot. That's how it's going to work.
But now it's going to create a paradox with what happened with like Rassilon and the Master and everything. It changes a lot of things. And just because the Doctor can't remember it doesn't mean it didn't happen. And I'd like to know where along Tennant's timeline this happened. I think it happens before the fourth season, because there's a point in the fourth season where he meets the Ood on the ice planet, where he mentions, oh, I was married to Queen Elizabeth, but we don't talk about that. And then when he meets the werewolf, she mentions it too, and the Queen of England was still very mad. That's why she creates Torchwood. So it's maybe an accident of the writers, but once again, it's time travel, so anything is It's bullshit.
I'm trying to remember, wasn't Torchwood an anagram for Doctor Who?
Yep. And okay. So it all ties into it. Now, one of the things I did like about the 50th is they reintroduce a classic bad guy called the Zygons, and they hadn't been seen since, I think, the 1975 serial Terror of the Zygons. So now, my guessing is the Zygons will be a threat in the new season as doppelgangers and all that shit, kind of like how the gangers were the big plot device in the sixth season, where Amy Pond wasn't really Amy Pond and the baby wasn't really a baby, and it's ultimately freaking stupid. So I'm interested to see where this goes. Now, I wish we'd seen more of John Hurt's War Doctor. Mm-hmm. Because he was so much fun in that role, too, where he's like, don't you people ever not talk like children?
Or, yeah, like, why are you so afraid to grow up? What's wrong about growing up?
Or he's like, they're screwdrivers. What are you going to do, assemble a cabinet at them?
Yeah, I love it so much.
Or when they're using their TARDISes, Geronimo, Alonzi. Oh, for God's sake. So many good moments with that. And I never expected John Hurt to take that portrayal like that. I mean, that's great. That's friggin' brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
So, the 50th anniversary, I felt like I expected more out of it. I would have killed for a true Eccleston cameo during it.
Yeah.
But with what I got, I was satisfied. But with what I got, I was wanting more as well. Although I will say this, I do like it more upon subsequent viewings.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch it again for sure.
I think it comes out on Blu-ray.
The 9th of December.
The 9th. So, and
probably, yeah, it's my mom's birthday gift. She's not in the house, so she can hear that.
Which is a great transition point to the next thing I want to talk about with the new Who. Merchandise, merchandise, merchandise.
Doctor Who, the flamethrower.
Doctor
Who. The sonic flamethrower. Kids love this one.
They have done so many cool things with this. In fact, a couple of years ago, a fan sent this in to me from Underground Toys, and it's this TARDIS case that has all 11 Doctors in it.
Oh, so envious of that one, and you know exactly why I was envious, because a figure of Peter Davison was so damn expensive on eBay, I could never justify it.
You know,
I always saw it at your house behind that packaging, and every time I'm like, I want to steal that figure.
Although, I did find on eBay, you can buy the individual figures from that set. It works out to about $10 a figure.
Oh, they're cheap now?
They are cheap. Yeah, because I bought John Peartree and I bought a Eccleston figure that I didn't have. And Underground Toys, I think they're the official licensor of a lot of the Doctor Who stuff. They actually have an awesome Cyberman set that I'm really looking at. They have these awesome Doctor Who voice changer helmets. They have this awesome Dalek. They got a Cyberman. They got a human Dalek one, too.
I know. The Dalek one. I thought the Dalek one was discontinued a few years ago.
Oh, it is. But you can find it on eBay if you're willing to, you know, sell your left nut.
I know. That's what I was about to mention. Is I've seen one in a store, and I knew how much it was worth. So I didn't want to ask how much they were selling it for, because...
You know?
I know... But I didn't think they knew after I left. I'm like, they have it up on the shelf here. I'm like, I don't think they know. And I wanted to go back in, but then I'm like, damn it, I bought Ava toys, so I have no money left.
You should have gone back, man. Fuck. And there's also a wide variety of plush toys. I actually have, my wife bought me, there's a wonderful craft community around this stuff too. And at Con Bravo a year or two ago, she bought me a Doctor Who cube figure, and it's the 11th Doctor with a bow tie and a fez. And then I think for our anniversary a couple years ago, I bought Blair a stuffed Dalek. For my wedding, someone got me, I think it was Justin Eacock actually, got me the TARDIS cookie jar.
Did you get the TARDIS purse for Blair?
I did. I got the TARDIS purse. I bought it off somebody on Etsy, I think it was. It lights up, it makes sounds, and Blair uses it as her like con purse because it's really small and it's really, really, really portable. I have a number of Doctor Who coffee mugs. I got a TARDIS teacup, which is shaped like the TARDIS and actually has the lid. It's pretty sick. Actually, for my birthday this year, My buddy Little Brandon. I love collecting mini busts. I don't get a chance to get them too often. Like, I've got a Superman one and some Star Wars ones. And I actually sold one on Comic Book Men a couple of months ago. I got a Doctor Who one. He got me the 11th Doctor with a sonic screwdriver with the blue bow tie. It looks really, really nice. I got it sitting on my new Blu-ray shelf.
There's a new bust that's coming out that I found out about yesterday in January, and I have to try to scrounge some money. It's a Peter Davidson bust.
I saw a really nice one. It was produced by Weta Workshops probably about 3 or 4 years ago, and it's Davros and Tom Baker. And it looks really, really, really neat.
You're giving me a boner.
I want the Cyberman one, and it's the Mondus Cyberman one, the original ones. I think this is from the Earthshock serial.
Okay.
And I really want to get those at some point. Another company, I love these guys. We've actually interviewed them on the show twice now. Guys from Cubicle 7, they did, there was Dominic Howell and his team did the Doctor Who, The Adventures in Time and Space, which is the role-playing game, though not the first role-playing game. The original one was done by Fossa in the 80s, which would have featured up until the 7th Doctor. I don't know whether they
could. Technically run that with Shadowrun?
I wonder if the rule sets are actually compatible.
Imagine a Doctor Who Shadowrun game.
It would be very immoral, although you could play a time agent, which would be interesting. And the rule sets, there actually are several. There is the Tenant box set, which I'm currently looking for, which has rules for Captain Jack and Rose Tyler. The new one, the 11th Doctor, which is the most current one, has stuff for...
River?
Has stuff for River, has stuff for Rory and Amy, etc. All the new stuff. It covers up until the end of Series 6. Doesn't have any of the Season 7, though there are multiple supplements available. One of the things Cubicle 7 is doing, which I think is really awesome, is every month or every 2 months, they're doing a new source book based upon a Doctor. They've got the first three out now. They're sending me the first one, and I think the second and third one in the next couple of weeks. But those ones look really cool, and I'm really glad to see that they're going to do every Doctor. I want to see what's going to be included in the 8th Doctor's book specifically, because he only had the movie, but he also had comic books and audio dramas as well.
See, that's a big thing they do with their extended universe, is all those Doctors still work and make Doctor Who merchandise, all in audiobooks.
Yeah, I mean, as long as the person's alive, they'll keep doing them. And, because thankfully a lot of their voices don't change.
No.
Over time. So, it's really neat just the fact that if we want to have our own adventures in time and space, we really can. And these books are not hard to find either. And the reason I really want to pump this up is they come in a box set. In a box set, I've only ever seen a few companies do this. One of the most early ones I can think of, West End Games did it for the Ghostbusters game. It came in a box with books and dice. They actually have Doctor Who dice there. They have, like, player's guides and little handouts and stuff. And just, it looks really sweet. So look at your local retailers or ask people to stock this game. I know we're going to be playing it for These Warriors Are Terrible, the Christmas special. I'm just waiting to record that, hopefully just before Christmas. So It'll be a furious night of editing on my end, I'm sure. There's also a number of different books available from DK Publishing. They published this one, and I really like this. I actually keep this in the bathroom, because everybody reads in the bathroom. Let's not joke about it. Called the Doctor Who Character Encyclopedia, and it's over 200 characters and monsters that the Doctor's come across. And one of the neat ones, I found out he's run across a lot more renegade Time Lords than just the Master and the Time Lady. There's one guy called Mobius, who basically lives in a jar, and he's attached to a monster. There's another guy called the Meddler, or the Monk, who's another
Time... The Meddler. That's a great name.
It's so cool, the fact that there's all these creatures I never knew about, or giving me background on companions I haven't seen yet. So it's nice, and I think the book's under like $20, or at least under $30 for sure.
There's one piece of merchandise that I've kind of bought. I bought one kind of like as a gift for somebody, for my mom, and then I opened it, and I want to get more, are the blind box, the Titan vinyl blind box Doctor Who figures.
Mm-hmm.
They are remarkably, like, great looking. I opened one, I got a Suntaran. Wow, it looks really, really good. Like, some of these blind box figures, they stylize a lot, and these ones, they kind of go for a bit of almost like an oversized head. But, and, like, obviously the Suntarans
are oversized heads,
stocky head. And this figure is awesome. Like, the base, so the body is like a nice hard vinyl, and then the top has a bit of that hollow rubbery vinyl, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And it just goes together so well, and they all come with, like, one of their accessories, and it's so cool. I have to go find more of them and buy them. These things are such fun things to own with all the different variants. They released a set that I obviously only found out about now, but it was a blind box set of all the Doctors. So it was every single Doctor was in the set, and it was all, like, random. So they had different incarnations, like having its hat or, like, different color of his clothes. Man, they're really well. If you can find it, yeah, it's $10, whatever, buy it. Especially if you have a Who fan or something. They're really nifty.
I bought Blair a Doctor Who lunchbox and this Doctor Who Lego set. I think it's called Minimates, but I'm not sure. Which, I think they've got blind figures too as well. But the merch for this show is awesome. If you want to see a lot of really cool homemade stuff, go to Etsy. You'll see that. ThinkGeek.com almost always has some weird exclusive for them. Underground Toys, like I said, their official merch is amazing. Cubicle 7 for the role-playing game. DK Publishing for the Doctor Who books. IDW produces a lot of the Doctor Who comics that are available, featuring multiple Doctors, as far as I know.
Like, you can basically get Doctor Who merchandise anywhere now. I walked into a head shop because I wanted to get some incense. Seriously, I wanted some incense for my room. And beside their bongs and hats, they had Doctor Who merchandise. Just plush Doctor Who things everywhere. It was very weird.
You know what's weird? There is a tuck shop in Orangeville, which is evidently like a British shop that isn't in Britain. Surprisingly, they don't have any Doctor Who stuff.
I know. I've been to British stores, and they don't carry Doctor Who stuff, which is pretty funny.
I'm like, guys, really?
They'll carry all my, like, Royal Baby stuff or, like, my Coronation Street, but they won't carry any Doctor Who. And I'm like, really? That's, like, the bread and butter right now, the BBC.
Yeah, like, just go get it. Obviously, for merchandise, I want to talk about this, too. BBC America is releasing a lot of older Doctor Who stuff. They actually have this awesome thing called The Doctors Revisited, which each Doctor gets a complete story, so 4 episodes, and a mini documentary, which is about a half hour long, on the Doctor up to that point. I know they've got 1 to 8 out right now. I don't know about 9 to 11.
I think they do. I thought I saw that set before.
I'm actually going to have to email the BBC because I really want them to send that to me along with Day of the Doctor. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff. There's a lot of cool audio dramas out there. You can order those from your local comic book shop or I think through Diamond Select or something. So just,
yeah, which most comic shops deal with anyway, so they'll probably get it for you.
Yeah, so look around. You'll find some really new, some really, really cool stuff. Maybe next year, Scotty, you and I will plan to go to Chicago TARDIS. It happens in November, so maybe that'll be our little vacation getaway.
That sounds pretty good. I can do a November from now.
So, yeah. So, I guess, finally, guys, our last topic of conversation, this will probably be remarkably short. The franchise going forward. November 23rd, 1963, to now. That's 50 years. Does the show have another 50 years into it? And
yes.
I'm going to say yes and I'm going to say no, simply because we did have a break from 1989 to 1996.
And from 1996 to 2005. So you had almost a 15-16 year gap.
So
the one movie, I don't really consider that. I consider that as like we're going to try, but I still consider it part of the break.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with the franchise because it's so hot right now. Inevitably, a decline's going to happen. It has to.
That's fine because a decline, I'll still watch if there's a decline. Like, I wasn't bandwagon jumping like some people are. And a lot of people who bandwagon jump, they move on to the next thing. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe I'm sounding like a jerk in the way I'm saying that. But those kind of people, obviously they're fans of something. But they're very easily swayed to move on to the next fashionable and fun thing.
Yeah, it's basically what's going to be the next hip thing to jump onto.
Exactly. And that gets into a really gray area when people start talking about that, especially in fandom.
One of the things that I've noticed, and you'll notice this on a lot of t-shirt sites, so Redbubble, T-Fury, it's Doctor Who on everything. I don't think that's a good thing.
Okay, well, I saw a really amazing Doctor Who one. It was a Legend of Zelda Doctor Who t-shirt, and it had the Hero of Time, mm-hmm. the Hero of Time and Space. So they reverse it a bit, but it's the image of the TARDIS falling and then Link's falling into it. That was pretty badass, but yeah, it's on everything.
And I think that's going to dilute the brand at some point, and somebody's going to get pissy with it. And there's even some...
I don't know if the t-shirt brand, if that's really going to dilute the brand in general. I think people will get sick of...
It's oversaturating things. I mean, I think...
It's becoming like Evangelion merchandise in Japan.
Yeah, it's literally on everything, and they're even referencing it in a lot of TV shows. I think the Big Bang Theory has referenced it more than a few times. I know Community parried it with Inspector Space Time, which I think they're doing a Kickstarter. Yeah, they did a Kickstarter TV episode, which I think comes out in the next year at some point, which I really wish I jumped on that, because I really wanted the Inspector Space Time poster, because nobody would get that reference except hardcore fans of Community. So
I know it, but I've never even seen that show. I just have friends who are big into it.
I'm hoping the show continues to grow. I hope it has a very long life on
Doesn't
broadcast.
Doesn't every
television?
Year they have a cancellation scare, and then it's like, oh, we're not getting canceled.
For what, Community or Doctor Who?
Community.
Yeah, although this is its last year, supposedly.
It's
yeah, right.
Last year.
Yeah. With Doctor Who, I think I can safely see the brand going forward in the 2020. After that, I don't know. I mean, ultimately, I think a lot of it's going to depend on how they handle this next year, with Capaldi being the quote-unquote last regeneration, and how they get around that. Because hardcore fans can be turned off if they don't
I think it's going to become the point of that cheesiness of, hey, we found Gallifrey. You found us, Doctor! We are going to let you have regenerations! Unlimited regenerations!
And then it'll be like, well, that's stupid, so where's the peril?
Yeah, I know. It's like, oh, okay.
So,
well, then.
Yeah, so the Doctor can walk out and get a pack of smokes, could be hit by a doll, like, oh, don't worry, I'll be back in 10 minutes. You know, I worry for the brand, because it's now in the hands of the storytellers. Mind you, fans, they'll speak with their wallets. I am hoping, however, we finally get a decent Doctor Who video game out of all this, because the one we got, the one on the PS3 and the Vita, it's not bad, but it's not great. So, I don't know, I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Oh, you're going to talk about Doctor Who Fan Club at Players
Yes,
School.
Yes, the Doctor Who Fan Club. That's another thing, too, that I think will play a big factor into it, is how we expose the next generation to Doctor Who, because Smith's era was a very fun era to get kids into it.
It's kind of become dark again.
Yeah, and it depends, because Tennant had a lot of fun, too. Eccleston, I think, would be a bad time to start a child on it.
Yeah, and Capaldi, I don't think he's been doing children's programming.
Yeah, I think the first 6 episodes, because it's BBC, so here's half the season, here's the rest. Fuck, I hate that.
Me too. It throws off the swing of my Doctor Who, like, yeah, Doctor Who, oh.
Yeah, but I'll see you in then. A year. So it's we're really going to have to wait and see how this all plays out. So I don't know, guys. Will the franchise survive? Most definitely. But having little fan clubs, I think having kids into it and raising them with the Doctor is a very positive thing, because the show's got some great lessons in it. It's got some great storytelling in it, too. And the fact that Doctor Who was originally conceived as a children's program has really done a lot for it. I mean, if you want to see something really neat, guys, go find or go watch, legally or otherwise, an Adventure in Time and Space. And it was a BBC biopic that aired the day before the Day of the Doctor. And it tells the story of William Hartnell and how he got involved with the franchise and how it changed his life.
Amazing. Which I really want. Now I think they can use, and I forget his name, is it Dave? I don't remember, but Filch from Harry Potter. Now they could technically, if they wanted to, incorporate the first Doctor They could use him as an actor.
I'd like to see... it'd be great to see them go back and try and recast the older stuff.
Well, they did with Peter... Peter Cushing played the Doctor.
Oh, yeah. We don't talk about those. But
oh,
yeah.
I love that. That's hilarious. Then also in the Five Doctors, the first Doctor had already passed away by then, so they had already cast a new guy as playing the first Doctor. So the first Doctor's been recast multiple times.
So it's not impossible to see this going forward. So.
I don't think so. I don't think it's impossible. And I'd love to see him as a Doctor, because I really think he embodied, like, when you watched it, and even if you go look at some clips from Hartnell, he really got the mannerisms of Hartnell down.
Oh, yeah. Like, you could just see the twinkle in his eye. Like, the one point I really liked about it is one point he's reading to his real granddaughter, and he's reading out the scene with Susan, the character, and he's talking to his granddaughter. He's like, "But I'm your granddaughter." He's like, "No, this is my one in the show. What's it about?" And he explains it to her. Really warmed my heart to see stuff like that. So hopefully we'll see more things like this. I'd like to see more of the adventures of other Doctors as well, and just maybe learn a little bit more about the show. So I guess, guys, that's pretty much going to do it for us here on the Topic Show. Like, this has been a good year for Topic Shows, even though some of them have been delayed slightly, just due to scheduling and just, well, that's just the way it goes. Although this month in December, we are going to have a holiday gift guide, probably, I'm hoping, to air on December 12th, so you have 12 days to get shit done, so Amazon
Prime.
It's
12 days of Christmas, so don't worry.
Yeah, so we'll make sure you guys get all that done. That'll be hosted by me and Blair, maybe Scotty if he wants to come on.
Yep, I do.
Everybody will be submitting stuff, hopefully, to me via little audio file, so you'll be able to hear Mike, Laura, and everybody else, I'm hoping. So yeah, that'll be, and then we're going to take a break until the first Monday or two after MAGFest. So I'm hoping to come back on January 15th or the first Monday after. And yeah, we'll have new shows, new Future Imperfect before the end of the year, new Last Exit to Ponyville before the end of the year. And we should, I think we're just going to start our new anime show in the new year.
That's what I was already conceiving.
So you'll be staying tuned for that. We'll have more Toy Talk shows in the new year. Good stuff. As always, be sure to check out thesewarriorsareterrible.com between now and then for our Doctor Who Christmas special and currently running Ghostbusters, A Spectre at Santa's Village, starring me and Scott.
And listen for my Wicked Show tune, the song I sing.
I think that airs this week, actually.
I think it does.
Yeah.
This is the third episode we did it.
So be sure to be checking that out. That's me, Scott, Justin as the engineer, Steve. And who else was in that episode?
Laura and Derek.
Laura and Derek. So be sure to be checking that out. So anyway, guys, until next time, we have been...
Klaus.
And I have been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, Geronimo!
Oh, for God's sake.
Wanna see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
okay, I'm good, Geico.
Holy shit! Oh my gosh! Freak! Die! Holy crap! Whoa! Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear... somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content, as well subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by at replying to at This Week in Geek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at PronoBozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.